Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens.
Play ball.
From Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona, this is D-Backs Podcast, the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Welcome to episode 25, a quarter century. Wait, what?
Can we ever be unofficial?
Well, we'll look into that. Maybe in the offseason. Fair point. This is our big season-ending show, guys, for 2015, a very special episode 25. It's like on when they used to say a very special Blossom. Blossom gets upset when she has a bad date. This
Blossom.
Is
really Blossom.
Remember they always.
I'm pretty sure they had other shows they did that with, but went with Blossom.
But they would always do that. A very special episode of D-Backs Podcast. Leo has emotional problems. Well, that's pretty much every show. It's a cavalcade of stars from the ballpark as we tape this Monday, October 5th, the day following the Diamondbacks' impressive win over the Astros to close out a season during which the Diamondbacks improved by 15 games in just 1 year.
That's great.
It was a lot of fun here on Sunday. I think there was an atmosphere of celebration of the improvement on the season. And also, Gub, I thought, expectation. People are buying in, yeah, and they see where this team is headed. And they anticipate that it will be the Diamondbacks playing these big games at this time next year.
You know, I watched the MLB Network when I went home last night, and they had a special on the postseason. I'm thinking to myself, you know, not quite there this year, but I definitely want to be there next year. And I think they've got pieces of the puzzle set in place now where they can be there next year.
And they're already making moves. We'll talk about that in a moment, some changes to the coaching staff today. Less than 24 hours after the season ends, we will speak with two big guests, two separate interviews. Diamondbacks senior VP and GM Dave Stewart joins us, an in-depth discussion about exactly what the front office has planned as they get busy during an offseason that begins today. Yeah. And so they're already having meetings, planning more meetings, and they're going to get on the same page and move forward from there. We will get the player prospect and roster evaluations from Dave Stewart, the general manager, and an interview with him is coming up shortly. We will also be joined in just a moment by D-backs manager Chip Hale. And boy, along with his staff, they did a terrific job working with a team that everyone agrees, Gub, plays some of the most exciting baseball in the league, hustles, plays defense, runs the bases really well. We'll get Chip's thoughts on his players, his staff, after his first season as a big league skipper.
I think the ball club kind of embodied Chip. I mean, it was a ball club that I think they drew off him, and they played the game hard all season long. We get here many, many hours before the ball game starts, and we see the coaching staff working hard with these players. On the field, if it's Glenn Sherlock with the catchers, Andy Green with the infielders, Dave McKay with the outfielders, the pitchers working, you know, there's working with the hitters, Turner Ward and Mark Grace. Everybody's always doing some work here, always teaching, trying to get better, and you really have to give it up to Chip and his staff, the job they did with this club.
I think it was a big success for the entire staff and a change. Mike Harkey will no longer be the pitching coach. We'll talk to Chip about that in just a moment. So that's coming up, episode 25, as we tape the day after the end of the season. I'm Steve Berthume, joined as always on D-Backs Podcast by the star of the show. He is the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor, Greg Schulte.
Ba-da-dum-dum.
Your thoughts? Give me a quick overview, 2015.
It was fun.
Go.
I think we judge a lot of times as broadcasters how the ball club plays, and we take into consideration how the season moves along. And I thought this season from the start, we started late, right? In April, right, Leo? This year,
we
like
started,
April 6th or something like that.
Yeah.
Leo has the schedule in front of him.
And right through October 4th.
I my glasses in front of me.
See, wearing glasses? Look at this.
Look at him.
Sixth.
Okay, from April 6th until October 4th, this season moved.
Sure did.
There was, you know, you have that August swoon a lot of times, the June swoon, but June into the All-Star break, and then after the ball club came home after that road trip, and they gotten over 500 with that four-game sweep in Cincinnati, everybody was really pumped. And then the ball club fell on their heels a little bit, lost 7 of 8. But, you know, got very competitive, had a winning month of September, and finished with a big win yesterday. So I thought it was a fun season to see the progress. 4 hitters in the top 10 in the National League, the development of some of the young pitchers, and it was a fun year for me.
You mentioned the numbers. We will on this program, episode 25. It is the highly anticipated return of Sabermetric SmackDown.
Dun-dun-dun.
So get Leo, get the Sabermetric SmackDown theme ready.
We'll dust it off and get it ready, and the people will, have spoke. And
we'll get the Gub thing going back in the winter.
Who was it that spoke, actually?
The people. The same people on the street.
The one guy who tweeted.
Talk about snake talk. Yeah, the one guy that tweeted.
These are smarter people, though.
So we will have a little overview with some of the numbers, and we'll break down some patterns and some trends and see where things ended up at the end of the year. It's always fun to look back at the numbers and see who did what. So we'll do that in between guests. Also on the program, the man who makes it all happen, the guy behind the guy. He is the mother of dragons, the Kingslayer. It's Leo Bad News Gilmartin. Always great to have you on the show.
It's always great to be here.
Well, frankly, you know, actually, we literally couldn't do it without you because you make it all work.
Actually, you're correct.
So
you could make it work better with someone else maybe, but you couldn't make it happen without me.
It wouldn't be the same.
No,
it would be vastly improved. There's no question.
Yes.
But it wouldn't be the same.
And there wouldn't be bad news.
That's why you're here. Somebody's got to bring the bad
Marvin
news.
Marvin Bad News Barnes.
So without further ado, it's our big season-ending show for 2015, episode 25. Let's welcome our first guest.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Well, fresh off his first season as a big league skipper, Chip Hale, kind enough to give us some time here on D-backs podcast. How was it?
Fantastic. I'm sitting in this chair where I'm sitting today. We did this before the season started, correct?
Yeah. Yep. And then midseason, too.
Okay, so that's the one. Maybe the midseason one, because I feel like I was just up here.
Yeah.
Well, that show kind of wears on people that way.
Yeah. But that's good, because the season went fast. That means the ball club played well.
I thought we played well. That's a good way to put it. We didn't play great like we plan on doing next year and moving on and you know, be talking about who's we playing in the playoffs. So we knew the areas that we need to get better in. And that's part of the first year deal. I mean, with Tony, Stu, myself, Dijon, it was really an interesting year with our relationships, and everything went great. And then obviously learning about our team and also our organization and what we're looking forward to from some of our kids in the minor leagues.
We do want to talk about what went on this year, mm-hmm. but just since you just mentioned it, what are those areas in which you need to improve?
I think, you know, starting pitching is a big one. I think the starting pitching, if we can get that straightened out, I think it helps our bullpen. You saw when our bullpen was rested, especially in September when we had all those other arms up here that we could pitch in down games. Our up guys really perform well. You know, Daniel Hudson started to really click. Of course, Zig was good all year. Delgado was the guy that got us out of trouble earlier in the game. And Chafin, when he's healthy, is definitely a force. So I think our bullpen, if we can keep them rested and not use them too much, you know, day after day, will be good, which means our starters have to go deeper. And that's important.
And Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart have talked about that. And you were kind of you had your hands tied this year with a short bench, playing with 13 pitchers. And that goes right with what you're talking about as far as starting pitchers getting you further into the ball game,
right.
Easing the burden of the bullpen.
Right, and that's something we talked about early in the year. You know, we didn't execute the plan as well as we wanted to, where we were going to use some guys that had options and move them back and forth between Reno. Maybe that's something that next year we can do a better job of as a group, because we did put a lot of innings on Chafin early. You know, he's made the team as a long guy. And then all of a sudden his role blossomed into a real left-handed setup guy. I mean, he's a guy next year, if I needed to, probably could pitch the eighth inning against righties or lefties when he's strong. Problem is we logged so many innings early on him, I think we tired him out. So those are things we have to improve on. And you're right, the bench was short. You know, we carried a Rule 5 catcher who really didn't get a whole lot of playing time. That's just a fact of life. So it was almost a 24-man roster for about half the year. And like you said, it cost us a guy on the bench, plus we need to carry 13 in the bullpen. in saying that, I think, Oscar, if we go to Fall League and watch him, I think you're going to see a big improvement. I was really excited about the changes he made with his offense. He proved when he did play he's a defensive major league catcher, which is great. But we really want his bat to blossom, and it is. I think Turner Ward and Mark Grace did a great job. And the last week of BPs were completely different than spring training.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I thought having Oscar there allowed you to use Salty in more creative ways than you otherwise normally would.
It really did, and that's what we talked. I talked in our meetings about personnel. It's interesting because I don't know if I can use Salty as the pinch hitter that he became. I mean, he became a real force for us off the bench.
He's great.
And I couldn't probably do that unless there's a third catcher on the roster. So maybe that's something we think about going into spring. It's just that third catcher, whether it's Salty or whether it's maybe Tuffy, are they going to get enough playing time to stay fresh?
It's never easy at the end of the season. When rosters are changed, player personnel, there has been a change in your coaching staff. Mike Harkey will not return next year.
Right, yeah. We informed him of that yesterday after the game. We wanted to make sure we did it as soon as possible so he can get out there and pursue other jobs. And Mike's a great guy, great heart. It's just, as we know in this game, changes are made at times. When certain groups struggle, that's what happens. And we felt going forward that another voice was needed.
That had to be difficult for you.
It was awful. I had known about it a little bit on Friday. Tony and Stuart informed me that they were thinking about it, and then when they told me, it was hard yesterday during the game. It just is. It's one of those things that's not one of the fun parts of managing.
Yeah.
But it's understandable, and we've all been through it. I mean, AJ Hinch, who was over in the other dugout and winning the wild card yesterday, he fired me.
Yeah.
Same way.
Yeah.
At the last day of the season. So we all land on our feet. Hark's a big boy. He's a very good coach, and he'll go somewhere else and be very happy.
How much did you learn about pitching this year as a manager?
A lot. I really felt like coming into the job, I remember managing my first game in Missoula in 2000. And someone said to me, you were a position player, da, da, da. And I said, yeah, and then after my first game of managing, I realized the most important part of the game is the pitching. So I really focused on that all my whole career in the minors as a manager. And then as a bench coach, especially more than a third base coach, but more as a bench coach with Bob, I really watched how you handle bullpens, you handle pitchers. And it's just hard. I think one thing Hark really helped me with throughout the years, he goes, don't ever – let the pitchers perceive that you don't like them. Because sometimes, position players, sure, when pitchers give it up or this and that, position players can show some emotion. So that was good for me because it is difficult. It's almost like sometimes when a reliever comes in and gives up a home run or something, it's almost like the field goal kicker missing a kick, and when you're an everyday guy who's grinding it out. So you have to realize their job is hard, sometimes almost impossible. Yeah. I mean, when they're coming in against some of these great hitters in the major leagues. So I learned a lot on that side of it, being the manager in the major leagues, where maybe I thought I was a little bit more ahead than I was. So that'll be something that we'll improve greatly on next year.
We'll talk to Dave Stewart about this later in the show, but he was speaking with the media, he and Tony, earlier today about the closer and Brad Ziegler, and they very much gave the impression that there is no sense of urgency here on the part of the front office to go out this winter and get another, using finger quotes, closer.
Right.
Because Brad Ziegler is obviously very capable. What was your relationship with Brad like as the closer, right, over the course of the year?
Fantastic. He was great. He informed us anytime, he had the knee surgery in the offseason. So the knee more than the arm would tire out a little, yeah, bit. So when he felt like he was fatigued, he was very honest. He's a veteran. And that's another thing that I learned. I mean, you just trust what your pitchers tell you. And when they know that you have their best interest at heart, they'll be honest. It's tough because the young guys will always tell you, I'm fine, until they blow. So Brad was great. I think he became a much better leader in the bullpen. The guys looked up to him. He was not a complainer when you got him up, sat him down. He was good about that stuff. We're happy with him. It was unconventional from the power closers, but like yesterday, gets in trouble, yeah, first and second, and he always has the ability to get a double play.
30 for 32, hard to beat that.
No, really it good. Is hard to beat. And, one of the things we'll have to talk about is, with Daniel Hudson, You know, is he going to be a starter or a reliever next year? That'll be something that we'll discuss all winter with him. He'll have a stake in this because it's his career. So if he does become a starter, then it does leave a hole in our bullpen that we'll need to address. And I think, you know, we've learned this year that you can cannot have too many bullpen arms.
And sticking with that topic of pitching, you have a surplus. While the Diamondbacks are going to go out and try and strengthen the rotation, you do have a surplus of young kids down there. We saw the development of Ruby De La Rosa. Robbie Ray started yesterday and pitched. You know, he showed a lot of improvement. Mm-hmm. But Chase Anderson has shown the ability. You bring up a Zach Godley this year, a veteran in Chacin who's been there and done it. You have a pitcher like Aaron Blair. So there are a lot of pitchers to take a look at when spring starts.
There is. You know, just I mean, the big key is to find that leader. You know, and I think Patrick Corbin can be it. Coming back from the surgery, he was great. Had a good year for him. I don't think he will. He'll probably improve a lot next year because he just knows he's healthy. That's part of it for him. But he can become that leader. I mean, it's important. We talk about it all the time. But when you have a bunch of young guys that have not really gone through it before, they need somebody to push them on the player side of it, not just a coach. But the players are really important, and that's what, you know, Tony talks about all the time when his days with Carpenter, Wainwright, those guys all were guys that if you're a coach, hey, I'm going to go to Carpenter and tell him to, you know, push somebody. And that's what we need out of Patrick. And I told him that when he left that I expect him to come back and be the lead dog.
Yeah, that's one of his great assets, I think. Yeah. His ability to compete, he's an athlete out there. He's a competitor, too. You see it.
Correct. No doubt about it. And we're going to get better at that stuff. But Ruby and Robbie really made a lot of strides. I thought towards the end I was disappointed with Ruby's last start because I thought he was coming. So we'll have to keep his confidence up. And he has big league stuff. We've all seen that. He won games. It was so interesting with his amount of wins with his ERA and Robbie's amount of wins with his ERA.
It's backwards.
It was really backwards.
Yeah.
But that's something Robbie's going to get better at winning games and lasting longer. And he started to get a little bit of the eye of the tiger out there towards the end.
You know, he sure looked like the way on Sunday, boy.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about Ruby is, I mean, you pull your hair out with the guy sometimes and then other times. But, I mean, he loves the game. You can see that. He wants the baseball.
Right.
And, you know, this is all new to him, getting this many opportunities to start during the course of a season. So, I mean, I really like the guy, and I think we all do. But, again, you go out there some games and you watch him and you just, Ruby, and there are other games, attaboy, Ruby.
Well, I imagine you feel a little bit of that, too, in the dugout.
No doubt about it. And we saw, as the season went on, we kind of saw some signs. And Wellington's really good with him also.
Yeah.
Let's give him a lot of credit for when Ruby was okay. And even when Ruby started to go off the tracks, Welly would try to get him back on. But we started to see signs of when he starts to go off the tracks, we got to get him out.
Yeah.
We'd have to get him out. And then fortunately, we have to limit those times because then all of a sudden now our bullpen is taxed.
That's during the game. What about the 4 days in between? What's it like? I imagine there's some emotional maintenance,
right,
some psychological maintenance that you and the staff have to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's mostly the pitching coach, you know, and if your bullpen coach is a pitching guy that can help, that we'd like that to be involved. You know, we'd like those two guys to really dig deep on the mental side of it. And I think you know, Ruby, like you guys said, he loves the game. He's always around. He wants to improve. Even Dave, you know, Dave Stewart will help him. You know, he'll come down and have chats with him, some of the pitchers sometimes. And whenever you have these kind of people to draw off, it's like me. People ask me, well, did Tony do this? Is Tony that? Well, it's the same with Stu. Stu has been there, done it. So if we don't use his expertise, then we're just foolish.
Turning to hitting. You guys can hit. You had four players finish in the top nine, hitting .300. Was the hitting even better than you thought it would be?
I think the final numbers, if you would have said this at the start of the year, I wouldn't have probably believed it because we had some unproven guys. I thought, obviously, Goldie was going to be up there like he was all year, MVP candidate, whatever you want to say. Number-wise, numbers were phenomenal. AJ, I felt like this was his year to do it, as long as we could stay away from injury, which he did. Ender and David, I think those were huge surprises to us. But those guys are just really, really good ball players. And we found that out. They got the opportunity, and they really ran with it. I would say situationally, and even in there were games with our potent offense that we were shut down too much. And those are games, even though our pitching may have not held up in certain spots, we have to do better at that. And that's Turner and Mark and myself and Tony and – even the minor league hitting guys, we're really discussing different ways to be better at getting guys in from third and two out RBIs and taking something away from their number one starter, a Greinke, a Kershaw. And we did better against Kershaw, but some of these guys really did shut us down.
There were many success stories. As you mentioned, right. Ender and David, and AJ is now an elite center fielder in the big leagues. Goldie's Goldie. He's out there all by himself almost. But there were some other stories that didn't go maybe as you hoped. Yasmani Tomas, the difference in Yasmani for you, first half versus second half?
Well, I think you have to remember, first year over here, wife's pregnant, just got married, completely new life.
Yeah.
And he came in and we pushed him hard at third base. He physically probably wasn't where he should be in his physical fitness part of it. And he got beat up pretty good in spring training. And we moved him to the outfield, bring him back to third. And he really flourished that first month. And just played baseball, I think, didn't think and played. And all of a sudden now he started thinking about things and went back to the outfield. And I thought for as big a man as he is, he played a pretty good outfield.
Sure did, yeah.
Until probably the last couple weeks. And, over in San Diego, he made that great catch going against the wall. So I don't think it was a bad season for him. I think it was a really good learning season. You see the potential every day in BP. I mean, he's hitting balls off the scoreboard. He's got the power. Maybe that was the issue, was when he was hitting 300, everybody was, saying, well, where's the power? And then he started thinking about that. You saw some balls go out of the park, but I think we just need to focus next year on, hey, hit 300. Don't worry about that. Stuff will come with your career. But I think it's a huge winner for him. We had a long talk with him, and it's up to him. He's a big man, and he needs to get himself to the weight that he feels like he can play the best baseball at.
I remember midseason when you were with us, you said, you felt like Yasmani was searching for that power when he was at the plate.
Exactly, and that's
what
happened.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, when guys search, like I said, for power, you can tell, and their swing changes, and they just – you have to – it's easy to say, but it's hard to do, is you have to take what that pitcher will give you each day, and that's what Goldie's so good at.
Well, something you did late in the season, you completely sold me on it. Pollock 3, Goldie 4, because that pushes your lineup down even further.
It does. It does.
Really lengthens it.
It lengthens it. I think the only problem we're going to have, and we'll talk about this when we get to the winter meetings and all of our acquisitions, is I hate to put a new two guy in there every day.
Yeah.
We need to find that two guy and put him there. Or if it's Ender in the two spot and a true leadoff guy, but where do they play? We've got some interesting battles that are going to happen in our infield.
Ender, in that leadoff spot, I mean, he doesn't walk a lot, but he sure doesn't strike out a lot. And you'd like him to walk more to get that on-base percentage up. I mean, he takes a lot of pitches to go to 3-2,
yeah.
But the ball's still in play. I know the walk is the one thing you'd like to see him get a little
bit more
just, up.
On-base percentage is so important. Get on base, and it would be nice to see him walk more, but he has that ability to, when he hits the ball, he hits it in fair territory. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of the same hitter. I walked enough, but I never struck out. And he's that same guy where I think as he gets more used to the major leagues, I think he will walk more. In fact, I'd like to see his numbers, and I'll look at it the last month when we kind of went to the Pollock 3, Goldie 4, and he let off. I think maybe there were a few more walks in there.
And I told you about this earlier, and I remember you as a player at the U of A and on the major league level. There's a lot of Chip Hale and Ender Inciarte, that fire. And you don't have a lot on this team. So sometimes you have to pull that in, but a lot of times it's really good.
No, he's good, and he understands it. He's really worked hard on that, because the one thing about Ender is, and even AJ has this problem too, is the umpire makes a call that he doesn't agree with. And whether it's right or wrong, they don't agree with it. And AJ's great about, he'll show some emotion, but it doesn't affect him as a bat. I think Ender got to the point where it was affecting at bats, affecting games. And as the year went on, we really worked with him on that. And he wants to work on it even more with some of our mental coaches that we have around. And I think that'll make him an even better player, just to be able to sort of flush it and get rid of it. So both guys have that fire.
Yeah, they do.
And they don't like, they know the game. They know what should be the call. Sometimes the umpires don't agree.
Yeah, I think we saw it more often from AJ this year than we have in the past, especially over the second half. You're right. He'd have his moments, and then that was it. Yep. It was over.
He flushed it.
I don't know if there was a player who got dealt a lousier hand in the offseason than Chris Owings.
Right.
Everything CO went through, could do nothing in the winter after the labrum surgery. He was way behind in spring training and then played, it seemed, catch-up all year long.
Right.
How much do you think of what we saw from CO this year was a result of the shoulder from last year?
I think a lot of it. I mean, Stu really kept us on that, because Stu had, you know, Matt Kemp as a client when he was an agent, and Matt went through the same things, so he never let us get down on him. You know, as a coach, as manager, sometimes you have a tendency, boy, this guy's not doing anything to help us win on the offensive side. His defense all year was fantastic. So Stu kept saying, listen, it's all his shoulder, this, you know, don't worry about it. And we saw flashes. We saw there were weeks where he carried us, and he was hitting balls in the gap and hitting in BP, hitting him in the pool like people had told us he could do before the shoulder surgery. So, I texted him this morning. Hopefully I'll see him before he leaves. But it was a rough end of the year for him because he was forced with Nick Ahmed's injury. He was really our only shortstop. So he had a play. And the one thing early on with all our infielders, when he did go into a little bit of a funk, we could give him a day, 2 days, 3 days off and kind of let him just get out of it. Where at the end, we needed his defense out there, so it was rough on him. But he's going to have a much better year next year. And athletically, he's as athletic as anybody in our club.
You mentioned texting Chris. Tony and Stu are downstairs as we tape this right now, addressing the media in general about the season. And they, first of all, they were raving about you and your staff.
That's nice.
But one of the things Tony brought up was, first off, he said, the way that Chip communicates with his players in the clubhouse, off the field, and that's so important these days. We hear about it all the time, coaches in all sports.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you go about that? What was your process?
Yeah, and I learned a lot of this from Bob, you know, from Bob Melvin, but tried to be, let them be who they were, first of all, and not just every moment jump into their lives. But when I knew that they were having a hard time, there were some struggles, I would either talk to him personally at night. Sometimes after a rough game, I'll shoot a text to a guy. I remember after the Colorado game that we were ahead, and it was just a disaster at the end, and we had the doubleheader the next morning. Yep. I had texted a bunch of the hitters, and just to hang in there, you know, to tomorrow was going to be a better day, and just to sort of. Because I actually needed it myself. I don't know if it was a catharsis for myself, but I was texting, like, and I just kept going and going. I couldn't go to sleep, and just wanted them to know that it's a day-to-day thing, and you can't do anything about it sometimes. I mean, that game was crazy.
That's interesting. 10, maybe even 5 years ago, a manager would call a guy into an office. Now you're texting from the hotel room.
Yeah.
Is that 2015? Is
it
that is. Where we are?
Yeah, and that's something, Bob. And, you know, and like the veteran guys, like Aaron Hill sometimes – I can't get to him, or Glenn, Glenn Sherlock, our bench coach, couldn't get to him before he left the ballpark that night, or early in the morning for a day game. I'll text him, you know, and let him know, hey, you're going to play second, or you're going to play third today, because sometimes the older guys need a little more preparation. Yeah. You know, they have to do their little routine before they start. So you try to let guys know now earlier when they're going to play.
I've just got one more for you, and. These go hand in hand at winning ball games. Your defense was outstanding, and your base running put so much pressure on the other team.
Exactly, and that's something you saw, our defense not as solid without Nick Ahmed in the lineup. Let's face it, this guy is a Gold Glove caliber shortstop, and that's something that we really are going to focus on in the winter and in spring training, get Nick's bat to be a little better.
Yeah,
you know, and he showed flashes of it. He had some power. But if he can get that foot down and hit the ball the other way a little bit more and hit 240, I mean, this guy's an impact shortstop, and Chris becomes such a really good second baseman. But, guys, we have so many middle infielders coming. You got Dansby Swanson on the way. Phil Gosselin showed us he could really handle the bat, but we need to get his defense up to par. So those are all things that Andy Green and myself and Tony Perez-Cheek are going to work really hard on this winter. And we haven't seen Jack Reinheimer, who's going to be in the fall league, be a fun guy to watch. So I think that's one of our really strengths in our organization is our infield, especially the middle of the infield.
And the base running.
And then Drury. You know, Drury can end up being our starting second baseman next year. Who knows?
I know you got to go to the media. One last thing from me. this was not the goal.
Right.
15-win improvement speaks for itself in 1 year. There were a lot of success stories here this year. For you personally, what was your favorite moment? Was there one moment where when you're going to look back and think, that I really enjoyed that
particular
instance?
You know what? There were a bunch of moments where I thought that to myself, and then we'd have a new one.
That's good.
I think it's good. I did an interview with Todd Walsh with Steve Kerr. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I remember coming out of that, and we talk about it, Todd and I talk about it all the time, and Steve talked about it when they won the championship with the Warriors, was what really sticks out is the journey. Starting from getting the job to meeting the players to interacting in spring training and just that whole journey with the group. And that's something as a player, coach, manager, that when you get out of the game, that's really what you miss more than anything. So when I think about a certain moment, I think the certain moment that will stick out, and I remember 2006 in Tucson with the Sidewinders, there was a moment because we won it all. So that moment when the last pitch was thrown, and in Omaha when I won it with the University of Arizona in 1986, many years ago, that moment in Omaha. But when we do that here, and I looked up and saw Gonzo's hit here and during the World Series, to win the World Series, when that happens, then there'll be a moment.
we had a good moment watching your baseball
team.
Well, great.
I appreciate it, guys.
And thanks for your cooperation and all your help all year long.
Well, thank you, guys. It was great.
Chip Hale.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
We're ready to smack you over the head with some serious analytics.
Thermodynamics, hypermathematics.
Like a wrestler with a folding chair.
Layeth the smack it down.
It's go time for Sabermetric Smackdown.
Back by lukewarm popular demand. I don't know.
That's very accurate.
Billy Bob's text.
Marginal interest at best. It is Sabermetric Smackdown. It went away all year. Frankly, because we drown in numbers all season long, and it's not always that interesting, let's face it. But Sabermetric Smackdown is back. And I thought, guys, it would be fun. In between guests, we'll talk to General Manager Dave Stewart in just a moment to look back at some of the numbers and see where things ended up. Let's start with the team. 79-83. That's a 15-game improvement in just 1 year over last season when they won 64. 79 wins, third in the National League West, 13 games behind the Dodgers. Gub, would you say that is better or worse than what the national media, using little finger quotes, anticipated?
I made a prediction at the start of the year that if this club won 81-81, it would be a tremendous season.
Yeah.
Coming off what they did last year. They got close.
Got real close.
And I think, to be honest with you, the offense was even a little bit better than we all thought. The pitching, we didn't know what to expect. They didn't have a starter that was over 30 years old all season long. So, you know, they had a very young staff. In answer to your question, I think 79-83 is very respectable for, you know, the progress they made, and it'll go above that next year.
No question. Diamondbacks second in the National League in runs scored, behind only the Rockies.
So, I might have surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, do with that what you will. The Rockies are on their own thing.
What was the run differential? Did you have that?
I did not write it down. I didn't want to bog us down in too many numbers. But they finished second.
Quick.
You have the stat pack.
They scored 720. The opponents, they were plus seven. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
With a young pitcher.
The Rockies
staff,
were probably
impressive.
Minus 150.
I don't know how you fix that. No team in the league had more hits than the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I believe that.
Diamondbacks third in team batting average behind the Giants and the Rockies.
Yeah, the NL West.
I think one of the most impressive things about the way the team played all year was the way they ran the bases. And base running and base stealing are different things. We talk about that all the time. But here's a number that you can quantify. Second in all of Major League Baseball with 132 stolen bases, behind only the Reds. They had 134, but 57 of their 134 came from Billy Hamilton.
Yeah.
So that number is skewed a bit.
132, 44 caught stealing. Dave McKay says he'll even be better next year with more knowledge.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
Especially with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he is amazing. Team pitching. This was the part that everybody says has to improve, but it was also, as you just mentioned, the youngest part of the team that is in need of the most development, and that's what part of this year was, developing a pitching staff. I was kind of surprised when I looked at the numbers. 15 teams in the National League, Diamondbacks were ninth in team ERA.
And you know what? Coming home after that last road trip, their ERA was under 4. It ended up at 4.04. It was under 4. And I think that's a major move right there.
With a very young pitching staff, guys you're trying to develop, you don't know. They come, they go. Chase Anderson's here. He's on the DL. He's in the minors. He's back. Robbie Ray. Everything they went through to finish ninth, right in the middle in ERA, I think says a lot about where guys ended up. So they were at 4.04. Cardinals led the league with a 2.94.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, just crazy good. Back to the offense. Going a little out of order here. Let's get to individuals.
We've kind
now.
Of been out of order all
well,
year.
Well, why stop now, right?
Leo's leaving the laugh
at that. You're out of order. This whole court's out of order.
Well, those were the team numbers. Let's go to individuals now. Let's call it top 10. It's really top 9. Diamondbacks finished with four players in the top 10 in the National League in batting average.
And I think you guys can help me on this. We had a note on this. The last time it happened was when Mark Grace was playing with the Cubs that four were in the top 10.
And that is going to be the big thing. People that write about baseball all throughout the offseason and at the winter meetings and looking ahead, free agency, spring training, they're going to look at the batting averages and go, wow, the Diamondbacks had four guys in the top 10.
I don't think a lot of people even realize that yet.
That's my point.
Yeah, exactly.
When they go to look at it, which is what we're doing here, it's kind of the point of this segment, people are going to go, wow.
Yeah.
Goldie, third in the league at 321. A.J., fifth, 315. David Peralta, eighth at 312. And Ender Inciarte, ninth at 303.
The thing on Inciarte, too, he only scored 73 runs. He's going to score more runs than that. And he needs to score more runs than 73, especially where he's hitting in the order.
That's the biggest need for improvement, and I think really the only one in terms of Ender's game, is the on-base percentage and the walks.
Yeah.
If he's going to be the one or the two-hitter, and we'll talk to Dave Stewart about that in just a minute, the on-base percentage, you'd like to see that come up a little bit. Not a ton. But it'd be nice to get 340, 350.
Well, here it is. And he was close to 340, but his batting average is 303. His on-base percentage only 338. If you had 303 and you can take the walks up, he walked a total of 26 times all year. If he could double that, his on-base percentage is going to get up there like you said.
That needs to come up a little bit. But the way that he controls his at-bats now, shoots the ball the other way when they throw him pitches on the outer half. Mm-hmm.
Draws that third baseman up, shoots it by him.
Just add a little more, just a tiny little more sliver of patience with that, then you're really going to have something. Goldie, third, 321. D. Gordon won the National League batting title. He had 333. He was 3 points ahead of Washington's Bryce Harper.
He had a heck of a year.
Yeah, he really did. Goldie, he's always his own category. Fifth in the league in home runs, 33. Nolan Arenado and Harper tied at 42 each, by the way. So Goldie was fifth. Goldie's second in RBIs, 110. Arenado had 130. Mm-hmm. Nolan Arenado is unbelievable.
Yeah, he really is.
I mean, he's 24. That's amazing. This is one I really, really liked, and it was just one more thing, Gov, that added to the fun on Sunday. Game 162. He had that big game, the long home run. He launched his OPS over 1,000.
Yeah.
Second best in the National League in OPS, on-base percentage plus slugging percentage.
570 slugging, 435 OBP.
Just behind Harper, ahead of Joey Votto. And I look at the run that Goldie made here, Gubb, and he had that long stretch where things got a little slow. Five homers in his last 13 games, including home runs in his last two.
And his last at-bat of the season, which won the
good
game.
Good call. What a great way to finish, huh? Seven home runs in September, the second most of any month.
And what did he hit in July and August?
I don't have that in front of me. I have seven home runs in September. He hit 10 in May. But here's the – but at the end of July, he was hitting almost 350 for the year. So the home run dispersal was fairly even. But he ended up really strong.
He did.
With the seven homers in September. Here's the thing with Goldie. When we all watched it, and everybody said, what's wrong with Goldie? Is he hurt? We all wondered. We speculated because it looked like he was certainly fatigued.
Or tired, right.
If nothing else. There was a 45-game stretch from August 1st through September 20th. So that's exactly 45 games, during which he hit 239. That's a 45-game stretch from a player whose numbers we just gave you, top five in the league in almost every category, a 45-game stretch where he hit under 240.
And it dropped his average like down to 310 or so, but he finished strong, as you said, because he finished up at 321.
And what's impressive about Goldie, during the 45-game stretch when he hit 239, the on-base percentage was 359.
Yeah.
So he's still taking his walk, still getting on base at an elite level. I thought that was impressive.
Here's another one I like, too. He played 159 games. Pollock played 157. You're two leaders.
Yeah, and that's big. Yeah. That's why they had so much success. Their two best players were essentially out there every day, offensively. The evolution of David Peralta. I looked at this and I thought, when
David had a great year last year, a breakthrough season. It was a great story, independent ball, the pitcher, the injuries. We all know that. That's old news by now. But this was the thing. When did he go from a good player and a nice story to one of the best players in the league, top 10 in the league in hitting? And I can give you a date. June 15th. That's when it happened. June 15th, we were at Anaheim. Remember the game at Anaheim? It was a home and home, two there, two here. Yeah. And in the first inning of the first game, Ender Inciarte had the hamstring injury, missed a month.
Yep.
So that was June 15th. So from June 16th through the rest of the year, David Peralta's role started to change because of the Ender Inciarte injury. They had to put David out there every day, even against lefties, and he evolved into the player that finished top 10 in the league in hitting. So from June 16th through the end of the year, David Peralta played in 92 games and hit .340.
That's a tough average to maintain over that stretch of time.
Yeah, and that's not a small sample size.
No.
That's a guy who evolved, whose role changed, and became one of the best hitters in the league.
And he was the guy who was kind of, he was the outfielder who was kind of shortchanged as far as at bats April through June 16th.
Yeah, the playing time was very
because
inconsistent.
Because Tomas was getting a lot of time out there when Lamb came back. And, you know, he still had Trumbo. When Trumbo was dealt, that started his playing time a little bit more.
That's a great point, too.
But Inciarte, when he got hurt, he was out there every day. And you look at his numbers against lefty. On the year, he ended up hitting .250, 80 at-bats. He had 20 hits. He had 6 extra base hits, 14 runs bat in. Only struck out 23 times. So his at-bats got better and better against southpaw as years went on.
That was a big part of the evolution because they had no other choice. They had traded Trumbo, as you just pointed out. Ender was hurt. It was a three-man, and Chip told us this before every game. It's a three-man outfield. These are the guys, so I can't afford any more outfield injuries. That's when David evolved. 2014, 80, I can't read my own handwriting. I'm going to say 81 plate appearances. 81 plate appearances against left-hand pitchers. He hit .197.
Yeah, see, so he was up season, 60 points.
This season, the only 90 plate appearances against lefties. So the sample size is almost identical. He went from .197 to .250. That's impressive.
Yep.
Last year, the on-base percentage against left-hand pitchers for Peralta, .247. This year, .311. That's a big jump. Mm-hmm. That's a real, real study and evolution of a guy who turned into a nice part-time player and a nice story to one of the best hitters in the league.
He has advanced leaps and bounds offensively. Think about it. This kid only came up, what was it, June 1st or June 2nd of 2014?
It was June 1st. He came up when A.J. Pollock got hurt.
Right.
When Cueto hit Pollock. May 31st,
he got called up from Double A.
David Peralta, who had not been in Major League camp last year, came up, and we all said the same thing. Who the hell is David Peralta? Nobody knew because nobody saw him. He wasn't in Big League camp. But, boy, they went to Mobile and saw him, and they were 100% right.
Tony La Russa liked him a lot. Tony had him as a pitcher in the Cardinal organization. Probably didn't know him because he was a young pitcher at the time, but then he had the injury and opted to, you know, play baseball more. Come back and took over as an outfielder and learned the trade of hitting.
So if you're looking back at Peralta, look at June 16th. Unbelievable. June 16th.
Mark that down, Leo. June 16th.
There it is, Leo.
Got it?
June 16th.
Let's quickly do the pitching. Ruby De La Rosa led the staff with 14 wins. He was 14-9. The only pitcher on the team with double-digit wins. Ruby led the staff 188 and two-thirds innings ahead of Chase Anderson, 152 and two-thirds. Jeremy Hellickson, 146. We'll talk to Dave Stewart about that in a minute, all the innings. Robbie Ray, 127 and two-thirds, but he was in the minor leagues for really the first 2 months of the year. And Josh Colemanter ended up throwing 121.
Yeah. Well, he threw a lot early on in in the rotation and then was moved to the bullpen. You know, the thing about Ruby to me, 188 innings, 150 strikeouts. He didn't walk as many as I thought he might walk. I thought his command was a little bit better. There were times where he would lose, you know, the strike zone. And he may walk 3 or 4 a ball game. But 63 walks in almost 190 innings, that's not too bad.
There were a lot of games through August and September when he would walk 4 batters in a ball game. Most of his walks came in the last 2 months of the year. Chalk some of that up maybe to fatigue.
Yeah, he gave up more hits than innings pitched. I always look at that number,
too. The home runs need to improve. Yeah. He gave up way too many.
32.
Ruby led the staff in strikeouts 150 and led them in walks 63. A big lead in home runs allowed. He gave up 32 homers. Brad Ziegler, we'll talk to, we just talked to Chip about this. We'll talk to Dave Stewart. 30 for 32 in save opportunities.
68 innings, struck out only 36, but how many double plays again? You know, that's what you look at and got the job done. Well, 28 consecutive, and as you said, 30 out of 32. That's pitching.
For me, that's the number.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times did he get the job done? Oh, 30 out of 32 times. It's hard to improve on that. He was 10th in the National League with 30 saves. Mark Melancon, how about 51 for 53?
He came out. And here's another guy. He doesn't necessarily strike out people, Melancon.
No, he doesn't.
So you don't have to be a closer and strike out people. It's nice if you're a Jansen or you're Chapman or something like that, but there are only a couple of those guys around. Getting outs, getting three outs and end of the game.
Do they need a closer? Do they need to go out and get somebody?
Well, we'll find out.
We've talked to Chip Hale about that. Let's ask Dave Stewart, the GM, as we bring in our second guest.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Joined now in our Diamondbacks radio booth by Senior VP and GM Dave Stewart, who just completed his first year as a general manager. How was it?
It was fun. For the most part.
Headache here or there, but mostly clear sailing.
You know, people said congratulations. I said condolences. But it was fun. Most of the year, there were more good things, things that I really enjoyed over the not-so-good things. The amount of work, time, effort, thought that goes into this job, I don't think anybody can imagine. But if you really want to do things right, I can't imagine not putting in the effort and the time and the thought in doing this job. When you look at the fans that come through the gates, you want to put a good team on the field, and our team, absolutely nothing to do with me, but our team, it had everything to do with Chip. They kept people watching. They kept people wanting to be at the ballpark. And to the last game, really exemplified what we are as an organization. And so I was probably more impressed. The happy part of my job was watching the guys play every night. The tough part of my job are decisions that have to be made, trades, which, you know, talking to a player and letting them know that he's being traded. Cody Ross early in the year release. That is not a good thing, and it didn't feel good. Those are the parts of the job that you don't enjoy.
Was it surreal in any sense at all to be on the complete other side of that, having just been a player agent?
You know, had I not done it before, had I not been on the management side before.
In Toronto, right?
Yeah, Toronto, San Diego, and Oakland. You know, I started this back in 1995. Sandy Alderson offering me my first opportunity to work in the office, and then going with Kevin Towers in San Diego in '97, getting even a better taste of it, and stepping back on the field in '98 as a pitching coach, but still having office responsibilities, and then ultimately going to Toronto in '98 at the end of the season, you know, as assistant GM and director of player personnel. So had I not done that, I probably would have a different look. But doing it before, and then eventually coming back to it, you know, everything just kind of fell in place.
You talk about tough decisions having to be made, and they are tough, and you had to make one directly after the season ended, Dave, with your coaching staff. Mm-hmm. You're going to change pitching coaches. Mike Harkey is not coming back. That had to be a tough decision.
Very tough. Mike and I were teammates in Oakland in '95, and we share a friendship. you know, when you look at your ball club and you evaluate your ball club and you look at the direction that you want things to go, you're not going to always have the same point of view. I know there are many times in conversations with Chip this year in talking about our staff and talking about our players where we differ. But that's what makes things work, difference in opinions, reevaluating the things that you think, and ultimately coming up with the right decision. And when I looked at our pitching staff from the start to the finish, I just felt that I wanted more. I felt that we should have more going into to the next year. And I've done this job before as a pitching coach, and I know it's not an easy job. It's a tough job. It's a really, really it's a job that you have to be very dedicated to. And so, you know, Mike, he did a good job here. And you know, you can't. I guess it would be a tough thing for me to speak about his effort in a negative manner, because he gave me the best that he could. But for me, moving forward, I'm expecting more, and I'm a very, very hard driven guy, as Tony is, and the results that I'm expecting in the upcoming season, which is a crucial season. It's a big season for us. We feel that we're close, and the difference in us doing this is going to be the guys that are tossing the ball every fifth day, and the relievers that may have an opportunity to pitch daily.
Looking forward, based on what you just said, you were talking about the work, the day-to-day of the season as the GM. Do you anticipate that workload now increases as you begin that off-season process?
I look at our team, the core players. I think that in those areas, we're pretty good. It makes me smile. I'm happy to know that we've got Paul Goldschmidt, and we've got CO, and we've got Ahmed, and we've got a Wellington Castillo, which, you know, when we started the season, everybody kept saying, you're crazy if Tuffy's going to be your guy. But he was doing a good job until he got hurt. You know, and we've got Jake Lamb at third. That's a great nucleus. It's a great beginning of our team. The three outfielders, they played well. The fourth outfielder in Tomas, they played well. So when I look at the nucleus of our ball club and what we have to start the season with, going out to the season starts tomorrow, I think we're in good shape. You know, now the other piece of it is how is our rotation going to mature, and you know, is Patrick Corbin going to return to the status of leading our staff, and what maturity, and what is Ruby De La Rosa going to do in the upcoming season, and where's Robbie Ray going to be, and is Chase Anderson going to fit in this, and how does Aaron Blair or Zach Godley, how do these guys all fit in, and you know, where do you make the pieces fit in your bullpen? You know, how do you keep those guys from running out there every day? Well, we've got to increase the innings from our starting pitching, but do we need a closer? Or do we fit pieces into other areas of our bullpen? And what you're basically hearing is the scramble in my brain.
That's good.
You've got that voice in your head.
I love it.
Well, let's start with that point. You and Tony addressed the media earlier today, and the clear message from both of you was that there is no urgent sense that you need to go get another closer, that Brad Ziegler is very capable, and maybe you're best served by just supplementing the setup core and leaving Brad in that role. Is that the thinking?
I think that the direction that we take the bullpen is going to be let me back up. If we had gotten more innings from our starting rotation, then I think that our bullpen is more than capable of getting the job done. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really a strong believer, and I'm not making this commitment, but I'm a strong believer that if it's not broken, you don't fix it. And Ziegler, 26 straight saves, I think. 28 straight 30 saves.
30 of 32 for the year.
I don't know that that's a broken situation. And for me, you know, in the style that he throws, I don't know that he really, you know, people talk he's going to be 36. And so at 36 years old, can he not get the job done? I think he can get the job done based on how he throws the baseball, the submarine style, which doesn't put a lot of strain and stress on your arm. We put him yesterday, for example. That is, we've got him in there to get
six outs.
That's old school.
Yeah, and he got it done easy. With Zig, you have to understand if he gives up a base hit, there's a pretty good chance that the next pitch is a double play. And so, though not the typical closer, the punch out, strike out guy, I'm more in line with a guy that gets out. So, no, I'm not convinced that we need a closer. To make a long story short, I think that he's going to be capable of getting the job done. We have to do a good job of evaluating the guys that pitch before him. And we have to do a good job of evaluating if those three, Ruby, Corbin, and Ray, are capable of getting us deeper into baseball games, getting us now into the seventh and eighth inning, or even the sixth and seventh inning. That really helps the guys before Zig.
What was your assessment of Ruby and Robbie Ray in their first full season of getting upwards of 30 starts? For Ruby, it was over 30. For Robbie, approaching 25.
I was really, really impressed with both guys. You know, people talk about the run support for Ruby De La Rosa, and he should have won 14 games. Well, up until the 21-run game, and if you omit the Dodger game, he was going into that start before Houston. If you take the Dodgers out with a 3.86 ERA, and he had won 14 games with a 3.86, which is, it meant that he pitched well enough to get 14 wins no matter how much run support he got. This is the first year he's had an opportunity to start every fifth day, and I thought he handled it very, very well. Is there a lot to learn? Yes. Is he going to be better? Yes. What kind of starter would I project him to be? I think that he's going to be a top-of-the-rotation guy. The second half of the season, he pitched minimally with his changeup, which going into the season was his second pitch. So somewhere between the start of the season and the end of the season, he developed a better breaking ball, not throwing his changeup very much. I think once he understands that he can use all three, and he learns to use all three, this kid's capable of winning 20 games. Robbie Ray, in my opinion, I thought he was very good. With more run support, the numbers could have been reversed. I think he's going to be a 200-inning guy. His arm works easy. God, he showed in situations the ability to pitch out of tough jams. And I think more importantly, the biggest compliment you can pay to him is he competed all year. Give up three runs in the first inning, he's in the sixth inning. Those are still the same three runs that are there. He competed all year. I thought that he gave us an opportunity to win each and every start that he pitched. I think he's going to be big for us next year.
Having talked about your top three right now in Corbin and Ruby and Ray, the general consensus in people talking about the Diamondbacks locally, nationally, is that there is a need and that the front office will go out and get more starting pitching. Is that the case? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, what I'd like to do and what we're going to do mid-month, the 15th and 16th, we've got our major league scouts coming in. Our pro scouts are coming in. We're going to and we've had two meetings prior to this where I've heard from our development and I've heard from our major league staff. And what we're going to do now with our major league scouts and pro scouts is, now they've had a look at our guys as well. Organizationally, they've looked at us, and they've had a good look at our major league team. And we're going to evaluate our club. We're going to evaluate what we are. We're going to evaluate what we aren't. We're going to look at what our needs are. And whatever that wish list is, once those meetings are done, then I'm going to, this winter, as best I can, attack those needs and fill those needs. I'm not so convinced that we need a top of rotation guy as much as I'm convinced that we need a guy that fits in, wins games, gives us innings, and understands the team concept and can help with the leadership of our young rotation. I mean, it would be easy if we could just reach in the sky and grab a guy that's going to be a 20-game winner and throw 220 innings and complete some games for us. I wished it was that easy, and I wished it wasn't costly.
There's only a few Jake Arrietas out there.
Yeah.
You have Arrietas, yeah. Greinke's, Kershaw's. Those guys just aren't out there to just reach out and grab and fit into your payroll, which is the biggest challenge, is to fit those kind of guys into your payroll. What I would like to do once we figure out where we're going is if there is an option to trade for an upcoming guy that has already proven that he's capable of being a number one guy, if there's an opportunity to trade for that guy, that would probably be less costly than a free agent. But initially, going into the off season, looking forward to next season, could we add to our rotation? Yes. But I'm not sure where that fit is, if it's the guy that fits at the top of the rotation with Corbin, or if it's a guy that fits, you know, in the three slot, you know, which pushes Ruby down, or it pushes Robbie Ray down. I'm not sure where that fit's going to be.
In the end, you get the innings, and the collective is better, isn't it?
It makes it a whole lot better. Yeah. And then, like I said, we've got to do a real good job of projecting and understanding what those three guys are going to bring to the table in the upcoming season. Which, you know, we don't have the crystal ball for that. But I mean, I would think with a year more maturity, a year more healing for Corbin, and maturity for Robbie and for Ruby, that we're going to get the innings that we need from those guys. And we're going to get better performance from those guys and consistency.
It sounds like, Dave, the meetings you're going to have later this month, which sound critical, that 2 days, are really, let's look under the hood. Let's not fall in love with our own guys. Everybody give us your opinion. How good are we? What do you think of this guy, that guy, the other guy? Is that the process?
That is exactly the process. we may have overachieved this year. I don't think we did. I think that the style of play that you saw on the field this year is going to be the style of play that you see year in and year out here. I don't think that Paul Goldschmidt is a fluke. I don't think that A.J. Pollock is a fluke. I don't believe that what you saw from David Peralta and Ender Inciarte, I don't think that those are just flashes and they won't return. But I could be wrong. And so in our meetings, those are the things that we're going to have to talk about. You know, people talked about the production from Jake Lamb, and they're expecting more. We're going to have to evaluate if we think he's capable of doing that. What kind of player is Nick Ahmed going to be? Well, we know he's a tremendous defensive player, but can we project him to get to 240, 250? I believe that CO was a product of having an injury and getting through the year, letting that injury heal, getting rid of bad habits. I believe he's going to return to the hitter that we saw a year ago. So that's what I believe. Mm-hmm. But our staff, who has seen our team and who's looking at our team with a different eye from me, who's been here day in and day out, we're going to make those decisions in the next week or so.
I would think the one area you really have to be excited about, too, and there was a question about it, player development. The kids you rewarded at the end of the season with call-ups to the major league level, I'm talking about guys like Brito and Drury and O'Brien, you can go on. These guys have all been productive, and that makes your core even larger with position players especially, that if you need to go out and make some kind of a move, you can look and say, okay, we're strong in this area. We could maybe make a move in that area. But your player development at the minor league level is really improved.
Well, we definitely we've had some good production from our players. We've added some depth through trade. We once again had a great draft. I was very, very impressed with our draft. We went older, but we went older so that we would get players closer to the big leagues. And that was our plan going forward. And I think that it's going to be a tremendous help to us. if we decide that we want to make trades, we do have the pieces to make trades and still keep enough depth for our major league club through the season.
Depth is something that other organizations notice as well. I know you spoke about this with the media earlier today. Have other teams called and expressed interest? Hey, you have a lot of good guys we like, so A, B, and C.
We've had conversation. Our last real conversation about what we have here and clearly expressing that we do have depth was through the trade deadline. At the trade deadline, there were a lot of names of young players in our organization that were thrown at us that clubs potentially wanted to acquire. It was encouraging for me to know that we've got that kind of ability and talent here organizationally that even more importantly, because the first thing that I look at is not trade, but the first thing is that I look at is what will these players be able to do for us? I mean, if we're going to contend, we have to have the ability to overcome injury. Mm-hmm. And I more so now believe that if any piece goes down, that we've got backup that can come here and play for us until DL time is surpassed.
I've got a little bit of a different question for you. You were 40-40. The Diamondbacks were 40-41 on the road. I thought they were very competitive, played very well on the road. How does this ball club get better at home? Your home record this season, Diamondbacks were 39-42. Is that an easy fix, or was that a fluke? I mean, it's been that way the last couple of years.
Yeah, I heard that. You know, maybe they keep passing the baton. But, I don't really know how we fix it. Other than you just continue to play through it. And maybe part of it is we don't know, when I say that, we as players, the people in the clubhouse, maybe the players don't know that that's how we play at home. And so maybe we bring that to their attention going into next year's season. But I also believe this, that winning, if we're going to compete and if we're going to win in the upcoming season, then the numbers at home and the numbers on the road are all going to be above 500. So I think that winning solves that problem.
Well, you've been great with us, so we appreciate your time all year. You've been a big supporter of the podcast, and we couldn't have done it without you, so thanks so much.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you very much.
Was there a moment that we asked Chip the same question I'll ask you as we close here. Was there a moment watching up there in the booth, evaluating that you'll remember and you maybe enjoyed more than other moments this year?
Wow.
I can tell you one right now. I thought yesterday, the way this ball club played in game number 162 against Houston, a team that was vying for a home field, and Chip, the way he managed, the way the players played through the ball game. I didn't want to steal your thunder, but I think that was indicative of the way this team played all year.
And I would agree with you.
It was a sense of possibility.
It is. Yeah. It was. Yesterday, they competed. They played hard. If you're going to finish the season on a note, that's what you want the fans to come back for in the upcoming year, how we played yesterday.
Dave Stewart. Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Chip Hale and Dave Stewart. Boy, those guys were great.
Got a lot of info.
Got a lot of info, two really interesting interviews, and we want to thank them and everybody in the Diamondbacks who's helped us with our project here. The first year of D-backs podcast, boys, is in the books.
And thank Josh Rawlich and Casey Wilcox and
Pat O'Connell.
Pat.
Can't do it without them.
Yep.
They get the guests. They help us out. And all the players who appeared on the show all the way back from spring training. When Leo was back in the restroom of the umpire's room.
That's right.
Which you'll be back soon.
Probably, yeah.
Right where you belong.
Unless they take that office away from us.
Returning to a bathroom near you.
Before we get to wrap up the show and do our schedule for what we think will be the rest of the year and then into next season, let's do predictions. It's postseason. It starts tomorrow with a wild card. Who will win? Let's start with you, Gub. Who will win the National League?
I think the Dodgers will. I look at the National League, and I look at the American League, and I really don't see any clear-cut favorites. The Mets are running a high right now with their young pitching. They're not hitting going into the postseason, which becomes a little bit of a concern. The Cardinals, they won 100 ball games. They're beat up. They're banged up. You don't bet against them, but I don't think they've got the wherewithal to get to the championship.
I agree.
Pittsburgh and the Cubs are very intriguing. I like the Pirates ball club. I hate picking the winner of that ball game because I don't know which team's going to win it. Jake Arrieta, Gerrit Cole, that's about as good a pitching matchups you're going to see to start the postseason. And then the Dodgers with Greinke and Kershaw, or Kershaw-Greinke at the top of the rotation, Jansen at the end. They get in that first series against the Mets. They'll be the home team. I just like the Dodgers' chances to get through and get to the World Series. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna say the Dodgers are going to be the team that survives out of the National League.
Look, it's hard to argue against them with that two-headed monster they got there and the big guy at the back
end of the
bullpen.
They've got some flaws. All these teams have got flaws.
They have a lot of flaws. Based on that idea, and I could be wrong immediately here, of course, why stop
You're
now?
Never wrong. Why Has he ever been
now?
Wrong, Leo?
I was right on the Nationals. I correctly predicted.
According to him, he's never been wrong.
Still waiting for the congratulations on that pick. I won't hold my breath.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
The team to me that is playing the best baseball right now, has the fewest flaws, and is best set up to succeed in the postseason is the Pittsburgh Pirates.
They're playing well.
I think they will win the World Series.
That wasn't the story about 2 or 3 weeks ago. They were slumping.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think the Pirates will win the World Series. Now, I could be dead out of the water here when the Cubs beat them tomorrow, but if I have to pick, which I do today, I really like Pittsburgh. You win in the postseason with bullpen. Yeah. You win with bullpen. I like the Pirates lineup. I think top to bottom, that's the most complete. I think Gerrit Cole is better than a lot of people realize.
So you've got them going. Who are they going to play in the World Series?
I have the Pirates winning the National League and winning the World Series. I think they will play the Blue Jays in the World Series.
See, I think they'll play Kansas City, and I think Kansas City will end up winning the World Series.
I like Kansas City's offense. I think they got to where they are last year in large part because of their bullpen, that three-headed monster they had back there.
It's not quite what it was.
Not even close. Yeah. Not even close. The offensive lineup is really good. I don't believe in Johnny Cueto even a little bit. You can have him. The lineup is good. The bullpen is not what it was, and I thought they won last year because of the bullpen.
The thing to take into consideration here, too, is how these teams played on the road. Kansas City was 44-37 on the road. Texas was 45-36. Houston, terrible. 15 games below 500. The Mets on the road, a game over. The Cardinals were 9 over 500. Pittsburgh was 9 over 500. The Cubs, 15 games over 500. The Dodgers, 7 below. That's even with Kershaw and Greinke. I don't think it plays into it as much in the postseason as it does during the regular season,
right,
home and road. But that's something to take into consideration, I do think. And
I think less so. I think it's just been proven it doesn't mean as much as it does, say, in football.
Right. Well, San Francisco won the championship last year on Kansas City's turf.
Game 7.
With the game at the potential tying run at third and the winning run at the plate.
I think the most important thing right now, I don't think it matters at all if you've won 105 games or you've won 85 games. How healthy are you and how are you playing right now? Those are the most important things for me in the postseason. I really think Texas would be a sneaky pick in the American League, but I just don't see that bullpen getting
all the outs you need to get. That's the only thing for me holding Texas back. Cole Hamels was a great addition, obviously. I really like the way the Rangers' offense is rolling right now, but that's not a good bullpen.
Toronto behind Price. I mean, Stroman's he's a kid. How is he going to handle the pressure? You've got Dickey, the knuckleballer, Burley. I just don't like their pitching.
I like their offense. I think it's good enough because the offense is there.
But is the offense going to be there in the postseason where pitching usually dominates?
I think it'll be there. I do. I would pick Texas if not for the bullpen. Having said that, I'll pick Toronto.
Okay.
But I think the Pirates beat the Blue Jays in the World Series.
Well, how do you think the Mets are going to do?
I think they're going to do better than everybody thinks. I think they will do better than the Dodgers. They're playing the Dodgers, right? I think the Mets will beat the Dodgers.
I think the Dodgers will beat the Mets.
The Mets are a better team than the Dodgers.
And the Cardinals are going to get the winner of the Pittsburgh-Chicago playoff.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said about St. Louis. Too many injuries.
Yeah.
It goes back to what I just said. They're not healthy right now. They're not playing their best baseball right now. I think the Mets are better than people give them credit for. That rotation is really good. They're hitting better than you think. Cespedes is a changer.
And I think one thing we can thank Bud Selig for is he was as he retired as commissioner of baseball, given that second wild card and setting up a game seven to begin the playoff season. With that wild card game between the National League teams and the American League teams.
It's hard to get a better start to your postseason than with two elimination games.
And they usually play that way, too.
One other thing I wanted to pass along, here's how it finished, kind of under that column, the clock, the pace of play. We talked about this ad nauseum in spring training. Everybody did because it was new.
Diamondbacks played some of the longest games in baseball.
Well, you're developing a young pitching staff. That's going to happen. The average game time of a major league game this year.
Was it 1 to 3 hours?
Take a guess.
258.
Leo, you sat through all of them. What do you think?
3.
I'm going to go down to 256.
The average time of a major league game this year was 2 hours and 56 minutes.
Oh.
You nailed it.
I did not know.
I think you did.
So was that down from last year?
That would take effort on my part to find out that information.
All the hoopla and the clocks and all the pace of play and the fines and everything cut down at the end of the year, cut 6 minutes off the time of every ball game.
Didn't seem like
it. Did you have ours?
I don't have ours individually. I just had it for the MLB league-wide. They sped up the pace of play by 6 minutes. Now, if somebody would finally get some iota of common sense and get rid of this idiotic roster expansion in September, I think September, and Gub, we all sat through the games in September, not Diamondbacks, everybody, the September games grind to a screeching halt. If you just come up with a taxi squad, whatever you want, but it's got to be 25 guys in September, no more. But that, to me, skewed the numbers for the time of game.
Or maybe expand it. Maybe you expand your rosters. You can bring up a total of 6 or 7 players, but you have your roster at 27 nightly.
Correct.
So you pick a couple of extra guys to add to that 25-man roster, and that would speed it up.
It would just be like
I think baseball's going to talk about that. Aren't they?
They need to. They absolutely need to. And I think the issue has received more attention than it has this year, I think, in other years, it seems like to me. Because in the first half of the year, the games were 253.
So that's an extra.
They finished 256. Yeah. So the games in the second half were 3 minutes longer.
Probably most of that was add on in September.
Yeah, that's why I think that's the issue. Just by the way, they used the pitch clock. Now, the only clock here we used in the major leagues was the between innings. In the Pacific Coast League and the International League, they used the pitch clock where you had 20 seconds between the pitches like we saw in the Fall League. Where's my time? Here we go. In the Pacific Coast League with the pitch clock, they cut the games by 13 minutes. The average game time there was 2:45. In the International League, they cut the time of game by 16 minutes.
Well, the other thing to consider about that with those young kids, they're up there swinging to the first pitch.
Exactly. But just for a point of reference, if you're a pitch clock guy, which I am not, I'm
not
fine.
Either.
You get me under 3 hours, beautiful.
Yeah.
That's plenty of time. A college football game these days takes 4.5 hours to play. So don't tell me about a 3-hour baseball game.
Yeah, I got no problem. If we can live at 256, 258.
I'm right there with you. So that's it, boys. Congratulations, Leo and Gub.
Job well done.
It was fun. Yeah,
on the first season of D-backs podcast. We will be back. We'll have a new format. I understand we're working on some new animations.
New format.
Well, it's an alternated format. We'll tweak it. You know, just like you would tweak a roster. We're evaluating you right now. We're not sure. We'll let you know.
You'll get back to me?
We'll get back to you.
All right. Well.
But we'll have our wizard, Jared Carlin, get in the studio and put together some new fancy animations.
He was a big help. He was had a lot.
Our great thanks to him.
Yeah, it's good. Everybody have a good off season, and I guess we'll probably join about the first week of December and setting up the winter meetings.
Here's what I got.
You guys might. I'm not sure about me.
We'll let you know. If you're in.
Hey. Believe me, I've been here longer than him. You're back.
That's true. Nice. Everybody's been here longer than me. Our next D-backs podcast, episode 26, scheduled to be launched worldwide. We believe will be just before baseball's winter meetings. Now, the winter meetings this year set for December 7th through December 10th at the spectacular Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center in Nashville, Tennessee.
I would like for you to work your magic to get us to go.
I was just going to say, why don't we go to Nashville?
Go to Nashville and do a
podcast. I'll go.
Have you been to the Opryland thing?
I have not. I've been to Nashville. I haven't been to Opry.
It's the size of a small city.
Yeah.
I've been to two winter meetings. It's crazy. It's a lot of fun.
It'd be fun to do a podcast from there.
We could do a daily podcast.
I will talk to the boss and try.
We could do a daily podcast.
How about that? Look
three
at
or four
you.
Days.
See, this is the next this level thinking need, that's going to have you retain back. Your position.
So we're looking. We could celebrate our birthdays there.
That's true.
We share the same birthday.
Oh,
how about that?
Nice. It's all coming together nicely.
I will take this right to the top and try and get some money. So we likely launch episode 26.
But we're not sharing a room.
No, I draw the line there.
Yes.
First episode dedicated entirely to the 2016 season. We anticipate first week of December. And then
just
maybe,
think of the guest and the length of the podcast.
It could be fantastic. It could be like a miniseries.
Our six-hour podcast is up and running.
So the week before the winter meetings, look for that. We take the next 7 to 8 weeks off and try and get some sleep after a long year. I will be at the fall league games. I don't anticipate seeing either of you there.
I'll be there for
a few. All right. Yeah. Hopefully we'll see you over there.
I might come out.
You might come out. Yeah. Wow. That's big news. To do a podcast from
That's
there.
The only place I'll be able to see you.
That's true.
I'm anxious to see Riefendorfer or
Reinheimer.
No, I was going back to what was the Rookie of the Year? Is that the movie where the manager didn't know the kid's name and kept calling him all these different names?
Our apologies to Jack Reinheimer of the Arizona Diamondbacks. D-backs podcast brought to you as always by Beverages by Hoffman.
Are we going to have new sponsors next year?
No. Well, these guys have paid for years. You should see the dollar figures
Are
involved.
Are they willing to bring
yeah,
us
we
to...
Yeah, should.
By Beverages by Hoffman. Hey, the sponsor deserves a clean read.
Start over. Beverages by Hoffman.
Beverages by Hoffman. By Martin Paints. Martin Paints and Anxious Paints. And Monsters by Stripes.
I don't know how to do that one.
For the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the Earl of Grantham, the Governor Greg Schulte.
Hey!
And the Kingslayer, Leo Gilmartin.
Uh-huh.
I'm Steve Berthiaume. Thanks for listening and downloading episode 25. We will talk to you again in a few weeks here on D-backs Podcast. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-backs Podcast.
The game is over and the Diamondbacks have got to win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-backs Baseball.